woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. We have Greg on the board, Greg Pappas on the board, our main man on Thursday. The S&P futures up 24, NASDAQ futures up 129. This is after kind of a really bad day yesterday, but we did rally in their close, so we weren't down near as much as... We were at one point. The NASDAQ futures closed down 480 or something. At one point, they were 800, 850. They were really getting whacked. I mean, because NVIDIA was down a bunch, and today it's up a whole 9 cents. The Dow is actually down this morning 494 points. The reason for that is United Health is down 120 points. I don't know what their announcement is, Greg. We wouldn't mind looking that up, but something's wrong with those guys. That's a move. I don't think they had earnings. You know what, maybe they did. I don't think they did, but they are taking the Dow down big time. We have Professor Liu.
I believe United Health is announcing its earnings this morning. I saw something on Twitter as I was getting ready to sign in this morning. I think they're announcing
I think
earnings.
Probably must have already done that. They're not liking them.
Probably not a great one. First of all, good morning.
Yes, how are you?
We're waiting for... spring snowstorm to hit this area starting tonight.
This area meaning where are you? Denver or
Colorado? Place?
I don't even Colorado. Are you in the on which side of the divide?
It's gonna hit pretty much the whole part of the state.
Oh, really? Okay.
Snow up and down the Front Range. Up at our place in the mountains, there it could go to 15 or 20 inches, but down here it's gonna be much less. And probably not stick around. We've had real warm, nice warm temperatures lately, and so most of it, we hope, is going to melt quickly.
Do they ever get like wet snow in the mountains, or is it always the real dry stuff?
Oh no! Last year, around this time, my house got 41 inches of concrete snow. What you call concrete snow?
Wow.
The real heavy moisture content. It was. You know, the average snowpack is 10 inches of snow equals 1 inch of rain.
Yeah.
This was something like 10 inches of snow equaling 1.5 or 1.8 inches of rain. And it was extremely heavy. We're actually kind of thanking our lucky stars that our deck didn't collapse because there was so much weight on it. I mean, I've never seen anything like that stuff. I went up there. We actually had to have our driveway plowed by a bulldozer. Wow. The snow was so heavy the normal plow guys couldn't.
Well,
get in there.
Left it. How long would it take to melt?
Oh, it took over a month. I mean, we had temperatures in the 70s right afterwards, and because it had so much moisture in it, the bottom of it compacted to ice. Within a matter of days.
Oh, man.
And
yeah.
It became almost unshovelable. We had a bulldozer clear our driveway, and we got up there a couple of days after they had done that. And I thought, oh, you know, it was one car wide, and I thought, I'll widen this out a little bit. It was like 4 or 5 inches of just solid ice underneath. I mean, it was just totally pointless. You couldn't shovel or chip it off.
United Healthcare is saying that the higher insurance, higher hospital costs are what's causing them to anticipation of higher costs from the insurance from a bigger than expected jump in medical care among older adults, selling its shares crashing 17% in pre-market trading. There you go.
Okay.
Now so, it's down 20%, not 17%.
Nobody executed one of their senior management people. That would have been another reason for the stock to drop.
And as your favorite POTUS is demanding Powell's termination cannot come soon enough after he won't cut rates for him. So there you go.
Yeah. I want to follow up on that because there's a story that's running right now that I've got some personal experience with, and that's what's happening at Harvard. I've watched that this case play out and this situation play out, and talking to my friends here in Denver who are all in a tizzy over the fact that basically the Trump administration's Department of Justice, the Civil Rights Division, has come in and made a series of demands that are pretty much untenable for any organization with respect to overseeing management of Harvard and its operation. And when Harvard said no, the first thing that happened was they cut $2.2 billion of federal funding. And the second time they said no, they told them the government told Harvard they were going to strip its tax-exempt status, which would effectively zero out the tax deductibility of all those donations that come into
Harvard. What part of all revenue bills start in the House? Does this guy... Is he turning into an absolute maniacal dictator on every subject?
No. My point is that what's happening at Harvard is pretty typical of what happens when you come into the crosshairs of a Department of Justice civil rights investigation, and I have personal experience with it. This is standard operating procedure, and it's not. I mean, Trump's. I don't know whether Trump gives two hoots about Harvard status, but if you're a DOJ civil rights target, which means the Department of Justice, has a criminal division and a civil division, and the civil rights division manages a lot of the civil division stuff. This is stuff you don't go to jail for, but they can levy huge fines, and they come in following a civil rights violation or what they think is a civil rights violation. And in this case, Harvard got sued and lost at the Supreme Court a couple of years ago on its admissions policy, which the Supreme Court said you were using race as a determining factor and you can't do that. So Harvard's admission numbers that are publicly available, because Harvard, you're sort of guessing because Harvard doesn't publish those numbers. None of the major schools do.
No, the private schools don't. The public schools do.
Private school, yeah. The Ivy Leagues. I'm sorry, the Ivies and others. They don't publish their race data because it's embarrassing, and so it looks like Harvard is not complying. Their numbers haven't changed. So they're still using race in some manner. And so that's number one. You've got a clear civil rights violation. Number two, the anti-Semitism demonstrations that took place across many campuses were particularly vile at Harvard. You might remember that their president got dragged before Congress last year and did a terrible job. And they had, they had students that were assaulting Jewish students on campus. And so that's another basis for the Department of Justice to come in. And then you've got the whole DEI complex that's at Harvard and that they embraced in spades that affects not just their admissions policy, but their hiring. So the DEI hiring stuff is a violation of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. You can't use race or gender or any other protected category as a basis for making employment
decisions. Yeah, we've had in this country, whatever you want to call them, employment practices that make sure somebody gets in there from every race or whatever they call them. We've had those for a century, and nobody's buying.
Well, and so you've been walking a fine line on that. But the bottom line is the law is very straightforward. You can't use race in the way that a typical DEI program uses race to make employment decisions. My point is Harvard puts itself in the crosshairs, and I don't know what their administration is doing. There was a great comment by somebody yesterday who said, you know, and she was commenting on the Letitia James situation, but she said one of the enduring aspects of all of these cases is that progressives don't see these laws as applying to them because they are operating or working for the better good. And so the idea that you would apply employment discrimination law that everybody else has to follow to a progressive, predominantly progressive institution just apparently doesn't occur to these people.
Okay, I mean, there's a couple of points here that, you know, I'm not going to debate you on the law, but people use the law wherever they damn well please and have forever, right? I mean,
if you're saying selective enforcement, I would say, yeah,
or that selective happens. Interpretation or whatever you want to call it. But two questions. I mean, I've actually wandered through.
That doesn't mean they're not breaking the law, and B, it's not a defense.
Two things. One is in terms of protection. I wandered through Harvard's campus at one point, and I don't even know what the hell town they're in. Are they in Boston?
Cambridge.
Let's look at DePaul in my neighborhood. DePaul is a city school, a big campus in the middle of Chicago. Those are streets. Now, if three people attack a Jewish guy, a white guy, a black guy, whatever the hell it is, on their campus, since when is DePaul Chicago's police department? Why is it their problem and not the Chicago police problem?
Oh, well, if the issue is not whether DePaul is policing the area. The issue is whether DePaul is taking disciplinary action against the students who were involved in the attack.
But if it's an attack, they ought to be arrested.
Well, did DePaul press charges?
What I'm saying is, this is a topic near and dear to my heart, because FINRA has decided PTI and all other brokerage firms are now their police department. Which I don't know where the hell they get off doing that. If somebody wants to, if you sign up for an account here at PTI, we're doing Interpol stuff on you. We're doing stuff. If your money comes from a legitimate bank, you know, Citi, Bank America, you name it, and it's bad money, we still have a problem with money laundering, even though it came from a bank and you're a citizen. I mean, this pushing the law enforcement stuff onto other people.
But this is not a law enforcement issue. Harvard is not being pursued, in part because it didn't arrest people, or enforce law. Harvard is criminal law. Harvard is being pursued because it allowed, tolerated, and in fact encouraged anti-Semitic demonstrations and assaults against its students.
Well, demonstrations one thing, and assault is a criminal charge. The city of Boston should have arrested the guy, in my opinion.
Well, but the city didn't. But you know, Harvard has a mechanism in place to deal with that, and it didn't use it.
Okay, right. I'm saying this is, but the second part is, you and I are running a university, and it's a private place. We got our dough. Now maybe we're getting some money from the government, but it's our dough. And I happen to know, a lady worked for us or married a guy who went to Harvard. And he said they've always had somewhat of an issue. It was a school for essentially wealthy New Englanders to go to school. Then all of a sudden, when they had all the admissions tests and all the other stuff, they didn't want to be essentially totally overrun by all the Jewish kids from New York City, because they did better than
the, yeah, than, this happened. This okay. happened back in the 20s and 30s.
And then all of a sudden, now it became, if you went straight, I said straight, if you just went, took the test, now the tests are just, now some people will say the tests are just one piece, and maybe they don't apply to all people, but for a period of time, I'm going to say in the 90s. If you would have taken the top people, not every single one, but damn near every single one would be Asian. And you know, or you might went through a time where one year every single one would be female, because or 90% of them. The school doesn't want that, nor would anybody. So I don't know how you get from A to B without breaking some law in somebody's mind, because the person getting screwed is always going to be bitching. I mean, I don't know how you get there. I mean,
well, and that's a separate inquiry. The point that I'm pushing right now is, what's happening? Harvard has put itself in the crosshairs of the Department of Justice, and so, but what's happening at Harvard is not unprecedented. And in fact, with respect to the way the DOJ is enforcing this thing, it's not unusual. The DOJ is asking or demanding that Harvard submit to oversight of its operations that would be inconceivable and frankly not possible under normal legal proceedings.
They want them to kiss somebody's ass. We know who that is.
No, that's not part of the demand. But overall oversight hiring and firing is. And you know, people are going, oh my God, this is unprecedented. No, it's not. DOJ does this in every one of these cases. If you find yourself the target of a DOJ Civil Rights Division investigation, they're going to try to get you to enter into what's called a consent decree. A consent decree is basically a contract between you and the government and the Department of Justice, saying we are going to submit to certain things. And the consent decrees are always overreaching. Because the prosecution realizes that it can get stuff out of you through a consent decree that it could never get in a normal kind of legal proceeding or a negotiation where it came in and said, look, we think you might be violating the law. You should submit to us running your school or running your business or running your hiring operations for a while. You know, no company's going to agree to that. But and it's illegal for the government to set that up voluntarily. But as part of a consent decree, you can do it. And so that's what the overreach. That's a huge part of the overreach.
But they want to change their structure.
They want to change their structure. They want unprecedented insight into what they're doing with respect to their employment decisions, and it's typical. I mean, I've bashed heads with DOJ attorneys on this issue multiple times, where one of my clients was accused of engaging in gender discrimination and tolerating sexual harassment in its workplace, speaking about enforcing law. And the government comes in and says, well, we want to look at the employment records of every one of your management team. We want to see who's been employed. We want the disciplinary files on every one of your people. We said no. And they said, fine, we're going to sue you for whatever. And we've got an army of lawyers.
I think it's total overreach on their part. How do we stop it?
It could well be, but this is what DOJ does. And this is how they operate. So I don't like it. I don't think it's necessarily fair. But if you're somebody like Harvard, and you have acted in a way that violates Title VI with your admissions requirements, if you're violating Title VII with your hiring.
But how can you ever, when a school says we look at all these different tests and all this other stuff and make a decision, how does anybody ever question that? There's a million other schools. I mean, how do you...
The same way that you question a private entity, like a business, that says, there are lots of other places you could go work. Why aren't you letting us hire only white people?
What I'm saying is, if you decide that if you go by just the tests, you're not going to have a white or black person in here because all the Asians are smarter, and you don't want your school like that. You can say, I don't see why you can't say we want a balanced enrollment.
You certainly can. And that was Bakke. That's the Bakke status that was in place from 1978 up until the time the Supreme Court decided this latest case involving Harvard in North Carolina.
So but if Harvard decides to give up that federal funding or stop taking it, this lawsuit doesn't go away, does it?
The threat, you mean?
I'm wondering.
No, it doesn't.
Like,
no, it doesn't, because that's only a small part of it. If Harvard says, okay, fine, we're not gonna take federal funding, the government comes back in and says, okay, that's great. You know what? That takes care of one part of this, but we still think you're discriminating against people. And this is the Bob Jones University case from what, 84? I don't know if you guys remember that. Remember yeah. Bob Jones University?
Yeah.
They took Bob Jones. So Bob Jones, private institution, didn't take federal money, as I recall. The feds come in and say, we think you're discriminating against African-American students in your admissions process and in your hiring. So we're taking away your tax-exempt status. And the Supreme Court said you can do that. So the precedent for this has been out there.
But they can still discriminate after they take away their taxes? Or how does that work?
No, they can. So they don't take any federal money. Let's say they do what Hillsdale, it's Hillsdale, I think, in Michigan, that takes absolutely no federal money, not even federal loan proceeds. If Hillsdale wanted to put its student body in a certain status, it could do that as a private education institution. What it couldn't do is do that, engage in race or gender discrimination in hiring, separate part of Title VII or of the 64 Civil Rights Act.
Hiring is different than admitting the students, which is...
Yes, it is.
So hiring has to be neutral, and
yeah.
Admissions can be whatever they want.
Admissions don't have, if they're not taking federal money, admissions can be pretty much whatever they want.
That's because they're strictly private.
Right, with no federal,
sort of like
with
a country
no
club.
Federal funds.
Like a country club.
Country clubs yes. can be racist.
Yeah, although for admissions, although a country club, again, couldn't hire according to race or gender or one of the other protected factors.
You can't have a, you can have not have a black or female member, you can't not have a black or female caddy, right?
It's slightly different, but if the country club's hiring the caddies, yes, that's right. And by the way, most country clubs, if I remember the case law correctly, you can't have a liquor license either, Tom.
Oh yeah.
Wait, you can't have a liquor license if you're discriminating against employees or
if you're
members.
Discriminating against members.
Oh.
Well, Bobolink sure does, and so does I think Butler has a liquor license.
So you got to backdoor your way into a liquor license somehow?
I think so. Yeah, I'm trying to remember the case law on this, but I think if you're engaging with government for any purpose, you submit then to these requirements. With federal law, it's easier because the rule is interstate. You know, it's the Commerce Clause that gives them.
So if
gives
an
them
all
power
male,
over all this.
All male golf club or something. Decides to get a liquor license, they can't get it as a club. They have to get it.
I think they'd have to get it in some other way, have to set it up. They'd have to set it up some other way. They would establish, for example, they would contract for that. They'd bring in an independent contractor to run the bar.
The same thing that, even though you know I have no great love for our president, the attacks on him by the Justice Department I thought were appalling. A couple of them, I think, were legit. But the idea that they go after the Justice Department in a very Gestapo-esque way, no matter who seems to be president, goes after people they essentially don't like and bring the wrath of God on them. I've had a real problem with that for like 50 years, to be honest with you.
Trust me. You can't... You ought to be on my side of it. You've got clients who... for whatever reason, have run afoul of some congressional committee or some senator, and you know the phone call goes in saying, "This is Senator so and so, and I'm looking at your budget for next year, I would really appreciate it if you would take a look at a company XY, and because I think they might be discriminating. And the next thing you know, you've got a notice of that your client's a target from the Department of Justice, saying we want all of your books. No lawsuit filed. No warrants. No subpoenas, and this gets dropped on you.
They did that here, Lou, and I don't know the full details. I told you a story about when they rebuilt the Dan Ryan on the south side, the bridge.
Yeah.
And how one of the guys that always gets the job, and I won't talk about the name, bid the first half. And it was done. They did a nice job. And they finished it, you know, by November or whatever they were supposed to. Another dude by the name of Buzzy Passion, character, owns Passion Construction. He looks at the job and the second part was a separate bid. You know, there are two sides of the bridge. So the first guys had left all their, I think it was Walsh, I'm not sure. First guys had left all their equipment there and everything because they just assumed they were going to get the second year. So they bid the second year, and Buzzy buzzes under him, no pun intended, by a lot, to the point where I don't even think he was covering his concrete. And these guys go, like, what the bleep? And so they had to move all their stuff. Well, Buzzy finished it, but there was such an early reward clause. He finished it like 6 weeks early and did a great job. He just said, I could do it a lot better than those guys are doing it. And he did. Well, it wasn't like a year or two later. I think the feds are knocking on his door and he ended up like in jail. I got to believe there's a connection. Just saying.
Well, and the weaponization of DOJ, the weaponization of state law enforcement agencies is something we've talked about many times, and it goes or any federal investigative agency, and it goes to the issue that we've said, the more intrusive your laws are, the broader of the web that your legal code spins, the more you become subject to prosecutorial discretion or just outright influence peddling at the hands of your law enforcement people. So you know, there's a great book out called, I think it's called Three Felonies a Day, and it talks about the fact that you can find federal law violations with virtually anybody if you look at their lifestyle and what they do, simply because the code of regulations and statutes is so broad and so widespread. And so you could become a target if somebody says, all right, I don't like Lou Michaels, he's a dirtbag, he hasn't done anything lately, but let's start going through his garbage to see if you can find, like, he's throwing away batteries or something like that. You know, or look at his cars and see if he's got his auto registration completely up to date, or let's just randomly stop him and see if he's you know, he's got some kind of contraband in his vehicle, and if you're running a business, you know, especially, and then you know this is probably better than anybody, the entrapment potential is huge.
Who's behind it? I mean, in the current situation, it seems pretty obvious to me that anybody who flips a finger at Trump is going to... I mean, he could be the guy behind it. But I'm not... This is not an indictment. But I'm saying in Illinois, or when the Democrats were there, I mean, Biden didn't think of it, yet it happened just as much. Who's behind it? I mean, in Illinois here, you tell me. I think I've seen rules. I don't know if we got a letter or we didn't, but if... A PTI is not big enough, but you have over 100 employees, 200 employees, whatever it is, you have to send your entire payroll records down to Springfield with like a check mark of what race or gender people are on there.
Yeah, and somebody, it's a state, the form is called an EEO-1 form, and it applies to companies with more than 100 people with regard to federal law. And then Illinois and a number of other idiotic states put a similar state law requirement in, and I don't think anybody looks at that, Tom, unless you come into the crosshairs of some state representative who says, all right, take this company out and shake them down. and so turn their compliance records upside down, shake them, and see if they've complied with
any one of these requirements. A phone call, and I don't think Pritzker does this. Hey, your firm's big enough. I need $5,000 or $10,000, and you say up yours. All of a sudden, the next day, boy, looks to me like this black lady down the chain here should be making $50 more.
That's exactly right.
But why does anybody put up with this?
Well, what do you mean? What do they?
I mean, I'm saying
why do the
people we elect all of a sudden decide this is okay? I mean, I mean, everybody always likes.
I don't think the people. Well, first of all, they get elected. You elect people with certain political leanings. And if you're electing progressives, this is exactly.
But now it's happening on both sides. That's
what's happening here. And again, this comment by this person I was listening to yesterday that for whatever reason, progressives don't seem to think the law apply. These laws are going to apply to them.
Well, neither does Trump.
I'm not. Oh, yeah. Yes, he does. He's, and what you're seeing right now, as I mentioned a couple of episodes ago, a couple of weeks ago, is the creative application of the law to people who heretofore thought they were basically immune from prosecution or from attention. My point with this Harvard case is what's happening at Harvard is getting lots of publicity because it's a progressive institution and the press organs of the Democratic National Committee are screaming about it, but it's not unusual. And if you've been a target of a DOJ civil investigation, this is exactly what happens to you. And I think it's horrifying to people that they realize just how
much of a mess
you can find yourself.
I can't imagine if you have 300 people working for you in Illinois, that somebody can't pick somebody out of there and say you're not paying them enough and you need to go to jail or something.
The way it works is they take a look at your numbers and it goes, this is one of the reasons why Trump canceled something called the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs, the OFCCP. It was an executive order that had been in place since the early 70s, and Trump canceled it because it was totally useless and was just being, again, it was part of the weaponization program. So let me tell you how this works when you become a target like Harvard is. Let's say somebody wanders into the Department of Labor and says, I'm not being paid enough overtime. And the Department of Labor goes, okay, we'll open an investigation. So there's an open investigation on your company you get a notice that DOL has a case and they're claiming your payroll records aren't kept in order. At the same time, a congressman or a congresswoman sees this report because they have one of their staff has a friend at DOL, and that friend calls the staffer and says, "Oh, company XY has got an overtime complaint," and the staffer goes to the senator and says, "You know, we could make some hay here. They're a big company, and." It would be really interesting to see what else is going on over there if they've got this overtime issue. So the congressman then picks the phone up, or a staffer picks the phone up and calls the National Labor Relations Board, calls the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, calls OSHA, calls a couple of other places within the federal government involving, you know, maybe the IRS, and says, "Congressman so-and-so thinks that there may be some shenanigans going on over at company XY. With respect to worker safety, employment discrimination, tax compliance. Could you guys take a look?" And the next thing you know, you've had one person walk in there who's made a complaint. The next thing you know, you've got an EEOC charge being filed against you. You've got OSHA coming to knock on your door and say, "Hey, we'd like to look at your door frames and the ramps in your parking lot and the way you've got certain things arranged in your offices. You've got the IRS calling you and saying, by the way, we looked at your tax returns and we think there might be a discrepancy on line 29 of your 2021 return. All of this rolls in on you at one time. I've had this happen. It is absolutely astounding. And the only reason that it happened is because some congressperson thought, you know what, I can make a name for myself here. And if I, because I'm a congressperson, I've got influence with the deep state. And this, when this happens, Tom, to your business, it feel, you can't buy enough lawyers fast enough to deal with this mess. And it's absolutely inimical to any kind of small or medium-sized business operation. The only people who can afford to deal with something like this are your huge companies.
Let the record reflect, I should never really do this, but I'm absolutely agreeing with Professor Liu. The thing that most listeners, if you don't own your own firm, or you don't do what Liu does for a living, you have no idea of what this can do to a firm. And when I say if this happened, well, if PTI was a big enough company, and not that regulators don't like to come in here and mess with us, if we were a big enough firm, and we hired Liu, and who's got to be, we have to bring like three or four people with him, I guess. And last thing I checked, he doesn't charge $20 an hour. If we win on all counts, 3 years later we're probably out of business because we couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
If we win. And what are the chances of us winning? And all, because they're going to keep pushing until they find something.
Well, you're going to get what's happening to Harvard. You're going to get the consent decree, and I'm. There are not enough bad things that can happen to Harvard, as far as I'm concerned. They're almost as bad as North Carolina.
The only thing I have about Harvard, I didn't even want to go there. So it's not like they have. What do they have? 10,000 people. Who care? Who gives a rat's behind? We go somewhere else. Me as a student doesn't need Harvard. It's not like it's a company. It's not like
I'm
it's
not
a hospital.
But my point is, the point that I'm trying to make here is, this is routine. What's happening at Harvard is routine. Now they're getting, as I said, they're getting a lot of publicity, but the short answer is, they screwed up by getting themselves into a situation where they were clearly discriminating on the basis of race. In fact, they were quite happy to admit it with regard to their admissions.
That puts them
in the crosshairs.
Every school does.
Well, you lose a Supreme Court case, you're in the crosshairs.
But the Supreme,
okay.
Lou, the Supreme Court collectively, individually I'm sure they're brilliant, collectively they're morons. They say something like that, they don't realize that if all of a sudden now every test has got to be redone. If you say there's community service, maybe athletics, maybe whether you're the head of the student council, oh, by the way, you got this SAT test, you got all this stuff. The school can say, okay, we're not going to take it. What if you just used IQ tests?
That would probably be the most effective predictor of merit.
Well, it's not a predictor of merit. I just went through this long conversation with people at breakfast the other day. It's not a predictor of merit. It's a predictor of how well you're going to do in the school system as it's currently devised.
Well, but that's what you're measuring for.
Okay, you're not going to get somebody from the South Side that has the same language skills as somebody who went to New Trier.
Well, I'm just saying, yeah. The point is, you can put in whatever you want in terms of diversity of your student body. You just can't do it on the basis of race or gender or religion.
Well,
you have to come up with some other way of measuring it.
Okay, so Harvard 1 year has to be 98% Asian. They're not going
to
do that.
I mean, they don't necessarily have to do that. There are ways of assessing other viewpoints.
There's sneakier ways, but the goal is, if we just went straight for 10 years, it would all be Jewish kids from New York. We don't want that. We don't care
if you went purely on test scores, that is probably correct. But these places don't do that. They come in and they look at what the service academies used to call the whole man concept, which the cadets, by the way, referred to as the manhole concept.
Yep.
What did you do in school? Were you in leadership positions? Were you a jock? Did you involve student? Were you involved in student government? Did you run the newspaper? What all of that stuff goes in to factor into a particular profile that you're looking for. The problem, Tom, and this is the problem with diversity, the diversity industry from the minute it got started in the early 1990s, the whole justification for diversity is based on racism. The idea that that we could look at somebody and look at their skin color or their gender, sexism, and say, this is going to give us view, if we let in a black kid, this is going to give us viewpoint diversity, which is what you're looking for. Because the justification for diversity, the economic justification for it, is that by bringing in people with diverse viewpoints, you you get a better overall decision making
process. Well, there's a lot of reasons for it. If you
and no, but that was the business justification. Well, but, and nobody argued with that. That made perfect sense. But immediately it became a quota system. Because you people said, well, it's too hard to figure out how we end up with viewpoint diversity. It's just easier to look at skin color.
It's because people at some level are idiots and do the minimum they can. I mean, I could see a city that's 30% black not wanting a police force that's 95% white.
Okay, that's great. Then we can make that a bona fide occupational qualification, and we can show that.
Well, I wouldn't do that. I would have every conceivable educational thing that I possibly could, so that the people from whatever neighborhood you come from, notice how I said that, you get a chance to take the policeman's test and to get a decent score, and maybe there's some training or something we can do. But I'm still not going to take the 100th guy on the list over the first guy on the list. You know that. I'm never going to do that.
I understand. And there are plenty of examples where race or gender is an occupational qualification. It's a bona fide basis for saying we're going to make this employment decision because, for example, we're not putting male guards in female prisons.
Well, if you want to pay somebody to have your baby, you're probably not going to get a guy.
You're not going to get a guy. We're not going to have male actresses playing female roles in certain cases. The BFO, it's called a BFOQ.
Well, we don't want to have any naked scenes if we're doing that.
No, not with who I'm looking for anyway.
No.
So the point is pretty straightforward. There are certain positions where or certain jobs where this is a legitimate occupational qualification, but that's not what we're talking about in school admissions.
I'm all, as you know, and one of the themes that you and I bounce back and forth, but we all. Boy, if I was ever in charge, Lou, I'd want to say 10 guys like you. There aren't 10 guys as good as Lou. All these laws that hang around on the books that nobody uses, I'd want them to get the bleep out of there. I'd ask Congress or whoever it was, take a look at these 50 laws. It looks to me like 49 of them aren't worth being anything. Like these acts that Trump's dragging out of the 1890s, get them the hell out of there.
Let's be careful about that because. You know, the Constitution's from the 1700s.
I understand, but there are laws hanging around in all kinds of places, just ready to that are obsolete.
This alien.
And I'm saying, just in general, we just keep making new laws. They must be replacing something, aren't they?
Well, they typically are, and they typically strike stuff off the books. What's happening again? The progressives, the Democrats, didn't think that anybody would do this. Because, you know, their strength is that of 10 because their hearts are pure. And suddenly they find themselves in a position where, oh my, the tables are turned, and now I've got a bunch of creative prosecutors. We used to have all the creative lawyers on our side. Now all of a sudden there are a bunch of creative lawyers on the other side, and they're taking this action.
Lou, you know that I try and be as fair as I can to make things even for everybody. But the Democrats, by taking it so far, I'll use the term, they've become what they detest.
Yep.
And it seems like it always happens. When you go too far, you become what you detest.
Well, and this is the cautionary tale for what's happening with Trump right now. There's a number of people, a number of commentators, and I don't count myself as a commentator, but I certainly agree with this, are saying, look, you need to think, given what we're doing with some of these laws, you need to think, and executive orders, you need to think what happens if we lose the next election. and suddenly we've got Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez rolling in with this kind of expansive executive order power on stuff we don't like.
It's no way to run a government. I think a real lot of people who are coming to that. I think the Democrats pushed it way too far. I think this guy's pushing it way too far. My hope is real America is going to find itself on one side or the other and say, look, we're not doing any of this crap anymore. We're going to do
it. Well, maybe we get there. I mean, I don't see any chance of it. I think this situation with Harvard is particularly illuminating for the average person who goes, I didn't realize DOJ could do that, and I didn't, one of my friends made the comment when he looked at the demands that DOJ was making. He goes, oh, this is just a setup to make Harvard roll over, knowing they're not going to roll over, to subject them to all these penalties. And I said, I got bad news for you. This is how DOJ rolls.
You know that. I slightly know that. They got to be careful. They don't let the whole country know that, because
that's what's happening, and that's why I wanted to make a point that this is not some kind of Trump vendetta.
No.
This is what DOJ does all the time.
I told you this. Real quick, my attorney buddy Bill, the guy who was what was his name? I don't think he was a priest, but he was an attorney guy. He probably wasn't a priest. He brought in all these people from what was the group in Syria, the Catholic group that ran up the mountain,
but somebody like that. Yeah, the ones that were being turned into sex slaves by the ISIS
and then they were slitting people's throats and all kinds of nasty stuff. So this guy does the case for the guy in Detroit, and I think there was either 19 or either 20 or 30 counts, and he's found innocent on like 19 of the 20. The one that he screwed up on was he signed a marriage document for somebody who wasn't the wife or the husband wasn't here correctly or something along those lines. So instead of saying, okay, that's good enough, you're free to go, the feds, and this guy's telling me, he goes, you wouldn't believe the videos, people like getting their throats slit and stuff that people put into evidence as to why we're here and why we should have this kind of asylum. And they ended up, while the guy waited for the second trial, they jailed him on the one count of signing the wrong marriage certificate. This is how the feds operate. I mean, if maybe this Harvard thing is a wake-up call for people or something. And this is probably under the Democrats. So I mean, there's something going on that is a little bit bizarre, right? In the midst of just when you think maybe the Democrats will wake up, they spent 3 weeks ago. They spent all their time on a state law that requires any school, like high school, I don't know about grammar school, any high school, to provide kosher or halal lunches. I'm sitting there going, isn't that when you say pack your own lunch? Why would anybody? How can you guarantee somebody a kosher sandwich, even in Chicago? It can't be more than a couple kosher delis. How do you guarantee that in Centralia, for God's sake? Is there even a halal restaurant? I mean, this is insanity. Not to mention the fact, if you know anything about Jewish cooking, if the whole kitchen isn't kosher, nothing in there is.
Yeah, right.
I mean, how could somebody? Right, no. How could the governor sign that thing and say, well, what are we doing here? We're trying to take back the world. We're doing something stupid like this.
Colorado is right now is ground zero of stupid legislation, and we are just looking at this stuff going, who thinks this is a good idea? Because the door you're opening here for bad actors in government is so wide that it's going to ensnare all kinds of people.
But you know what, Lou? If you and I were smart, and we are in some areas, but we're not really savvy. If we were smart and found an old building, we'd go right to the mayor and say, "Guess what? We'll cater Jewish lunches to every high school in town $50 a lunch. I bet they say okay.
Well, that's what that huge fraud in Minnesota during COVID was over. You know, that they milked a bunch of Somali refugees or whatever, milked something like $250 million out of the state's COVID fund, allegedly for feeding school children, or, you know, depressed or poor school children during COVID, and the state let them just run with it.
Well, there were a lot of depressed people during COVID. A lot of them haven't come out of it.
Yeah, the you love this, the recent trial of three or four of these crooks. One of the jurors got a knock on her door, at the door of her house. She goes to the front door. There's nobody there, but there's an envelope with $120,000 in it.
That'd be a big envelope
on her doorstep. I mean, anyway.
Now, would you knock on the neighbor's door and say, shouldn't this be yours, or would you take
it? No, I don't think I. She did exactly the right thing. She called the cops, and they found out who did it. But let me change.
Hey, can I ask you? Can I ask you one question?
That's a question already, but yes, you may.
Okay. I had brunch with Audrey and her pack of gang, and terrific people. And one of them is Diane Kelly. She's been on the show a couple times. She is the one that runs the Fisher House here in Chicago, and they're building a new one up at Great Lakes. And actually, a couple people on the show sent her money. She does a lot of work at the Veterans Home. Matter of fact, she's cooking Easter morning for 30 people by herself at the Veterans Home. I mean, she's terrific. And
where do you find these people? How do we get these people?
You know what? I'll tell you something about her. She was her name is Diane Kelly, but if you look at her, you'd say that's not Diane Kelly. She's Korean. She was a Korean baby adopted here by an Irish family. She's a Samanier. She's a terrific person. She helps everybody. She's been working for the vets. She serves communion there at 5 o'clock every Sunday at the Veterans Hall. They have 5 o'clock mass, and she goes and serves communion. And she's worked for them. Well, now she's got in this thing with the Fisher House, and they're like the Ronald McDonald House. But she mentioned something. She goes, all the veterans' hospitals have kind of their... If you got a burn problem, I guess it's in San, wherever is the Texas one, they're the specialists on burns. The ones here is eyesight, because of course we got the couple floors where guys are 100 years old, just kind of waiting to die, unfortunately. But they're also one of the big cancer areas here. She says the amount of people from Vietnam, whether it's Agent Orange or something, that have cancer is off the chart. Does anybody know about that?
Yep. Tom, every one of my classmates who flew for their careers, their military careers, every one of us has with more than 1,000 hours of flying time, every one of us has developed cancer of some form.
Why?
I don't have a classmate who was in the flying business who hasn't.
Why?
And so
the commercial pilots don't, do they?
They have a similar kind of problem, but not as direct, because military people fly in aircraft that are relatively unshielded, especially if you're flying in a glass cockpit.
Oh.
So every, you know, and the heavy drivers, the guys flying the tankers and transport aircraft and stuff like that, you're up for so much longer, you know, over a short period of time. And so That's just we're learning that's an occupational hazard of being a military aviator.
Well, this Vietnam War is just the war that keeps on giving, huh?
Well, it's not just Vietnam. I mean, we're going to see this. We're seeing this with the Iraq War guys who took the
They do a lot of this. They're mostly a lot of the artificial limbs and stuff they do are for those guys.
Yeah. So, but you've got the Iraq War guys who took the shots, who were exposed to depleted uranium, who were exposed to the burn pit chemicals that were used over there, all of that stuff. That's mainly Iraq one and some of Gulf War two.
I didn't think the guys from Iraq one kind of had any problems, but they do, huh?
Well, that's where Gulf War syndrome came from.
Really?
You know, that's what it was. And we think we...
I didn't think it lasted long enough for all that to happen, but...
There's a reasonably good case to be made that a huge part of the Gulf War Syndrome cases are the result of the cocktail of vaccines and preventative stuff that these guys were injected with as they deployed. Anti-nerve gas agents, anti-biological warfare agents.
You got injected with it?
All put into a cocktail of vaccines and given to these guys.
What manner of moron would do that?
Oh, DOD did it, and they did it under special dispensation from the FDA, which was supposed to be out there protecting these people. And they gave them the injection. It gets even better, Tom, and I have some expertise in this area.
Yes, you do.
It gets even better. They didn't even annotate the shot records of these guys with what they were getting, so that when they got sick later, it was impossible to verify what had happened to them. It took over a decade before some epidemiologists finally started reaching back and saying, exactly what were we giving people? And so they got an anthrax, a modified anthrax vaccine that was not licensed. A bunch of other stuff that was experimental. And then all at once.
Well, we got to talk about this next week more, because I'm always curious is who in the chain of command thinks he's smart enough to make that decision. I mean, it doesn't go to the Oval Office, I don't think. Well, let's talk about it next week, buddy. Hey, have a nice weekend. What are you guys doing for Easter? Doing anything or just regular?
We're going to be shoveling snow.
Good luck with that. All right, buddy. Thanks. Talk to you next week. Happy Easter. S&P futures up 30. NASDAQ futures up 145. You want to do like a 1 minute break and then we'll get to our guys?
It's even better to see him in person because he's Mr. Gesture.
Oh, yeah?
Whenever he's talking, the hands are moving.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused?
A lot of the stuff...
Well, North Bay Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Greg Pappas on the board. SP futures up 30. NASDAQ futures up 170. The Dow is down, though, because United Healthcare is down 115 points. That's 20%. So that's, 750 in the Dow, Greg? Something like that? The multiplier is like 7, I believe, or 680 or something like that. So that's like 700 Dow points. We have Wayne and Andrew. I think we got them.
Good morning.
Morning. How are you guys?
Oh, we're just peachy keen here.
I can see that. So we have a stock in the Dow down 20%, saying how much the cost of medical care is going up, but they're paying for it. It's an insurance stock. We had the Fed chair yesterday talking about they're so concerned about inflation because of the tariffs that they don't want to lower interest rates. We've got the long-term rates seemingly creeping up, although they've stopped creeping up there, but they're up higher than they were. And then you got a president who says we can't wait to fire the guy and lower rates. Wow, there's a cauldron.
Yeah, I was kind of concerned about it, Trump's choice of words. He said as far as Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Fed's concerned, is termination cannot come fast enough.
When is his termination?
Yeah. When's his term over?
I think next spring.
Next spring? Yeah, I know it's in. It's not beyond the 4 years. It's in the 4 years somewhere. That's interesting. I mean, how can the guy not be worried about inflation with all the stuff going on? I mean,
well, he says prices are coming down. I was at the supermarket just yesterday. We know he doesn't go to a supermarket, but I don't know what universe the guy's living in. Eggs are not only still hard to get because supply chain issues, but they're still very expensive. I look at eggs now as a I might as well be buying sturgeon eggs, caviar, $100 an ounce.
Well, the CPI last month, and this maybe one of you guys can educate me here, as my grandmother used to say. Why is there an adjustment on the monthly CPI? I mean, not just an adjustment on the total number, but there's adjustment. Like somebody, and actually one of the contributors of the show, Mike Murphy, his mom used to work for the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And every month, I think it was part-time, but I don't know, I never asked him, but her job was to go out, and I don't know what she was, rice, cereals, and something, to go to like five or six stores in the Cleveland area and check the prices vis-a-vis last month. So Mrs. Murphy turns in the rice number. How does it get to like a guy like Andrew's desk and go, that's not right. we're changing it. Yeah. I mean, single one is... But anyway, last month... The adjusted CPI was actually down 0.1% for the month. The unadjusted was positive 0.2. So Powell says inflation is down, but almost all of that was energy, which actually had a downtick in the month, but it didn't here. And what I'm noticing is oil's down from 72 to 62, but our Bob, gas is the same price. It's like 204. So something's going on there with the refinery sort of thing. But... Greg, can you? Greg is our guy. Greg actually trades in the Board of Trade with a.
Sorry, I'm dealing with sound stuff here.
All right, okay. Sorry. Well, when you come back, let us know why gas is not following oil, because that's what Greg does for like a real living. So, guys, what do you think is going on? We just were talking to Lou about this Harvard situation. What's your guys read?
Well, I mean, Harvard. I've been up there one time. I was invited to a seminar there, and but I gotta give them credit for holding fast on this, because we know that, like with the law firms, the white shoe law firms, that if one university folds, like one law firm folds, there's going to be a whole bunch more following suit. So I'm kind of happy that they're standing their ground. Of course, they're in a different position, and Annie might know more about this, but they have a lot of money in their trust funds, so they could probably weather this storm. I don't know whether other universities are in the same financial position.
I just saw.
Well, of course, there's a whole range of universities, but I think there's a big picture to try to answer your question, Chief. The strategy for the administration is to pick off the universities, law firms, and others, one by one, but that assumes that there's a deal, and actually the same thing on tariffs and countries. But if you're inclined to make a deal, and you think, well, what is it, an absolute deal that's enforceable and predictable? But if it keeps changing, at some point you're backed in the corner and you got to fight. I think that's what's happening in all of these situations. Tariffs, universities, and law firms.
What is the, this was a headline here in Crane just saying, I had a chance to read the whole article, that Kirkland and Ellis had made a deal. What in God's name are they after from Kirkland and Ellis, and what deal did they make? Do you have any idea? I mean, Kirkland and Ellis is huge.
Well, I think that's evolving. Of course, it's a Chicago-based firm that, like a lot of them, are international, global. I used to work briefly at the Chicago office of Latham & Watkins, which is another one that made a deal. But that there's reporting that some of the deals, to go to your question, are unraveling for the reason that I just mentioned. Because the deal is, okay, you give $100 million of pro bono legal work to causes that Trump likes. And the way it was initially reported, well, it might be to help veterans. And so maybe the leaders of these firms say, well, all right, we do pro bono work anyway, veterans, that sounds good. All right, we can live with that. But you start getting into the weeds of what exactly is this legal work? And that goes to your question, Chief, you know.
Yeah, what are we doing? I mean, what are they doing? I mean, are they giving them money? Are they giving Trump money?
No, it's legal work. In the abstract, it sounds harmless. But part of the reporting, I think it was 2 days ago in the New York Times, is some of the law firms are having second thoughts. Because suppose this legal work conflicts with existing clients. Suppose it's in the business realm. Suppose it's to advocate a particular policy position that these law firms with 1,000 attorneys and multiples of that clients are opposed to. And so, you know, I don't think any of the big law firms that have made the so-called deal are at this point reported as backing away, but you can almost predict that it might, just like the tariff situation, because once you get into specifics, there's going to be problems.
Well, does somebody in the administration sort of reserve the right to call Kirkland Ellis and say, you better defend this for nothing?
Well, the reporting is that Boris Epstein, who's the key person, Wayne knows a lot about him. A lot of your listeners might know a lot about him. But part of the process, and again with tariffs, universities, is you can't find people who are doing the specifics and get them on the record. So it all goes back to the president and a few people at the White House, and people don't know.
Well, I mean, that's my, you guys, if you listen in at all, my biggest bitch on the tariffs, and there actually could be reasons to have tariffs on a few places for child labor stuff and other reasons, but the idea that it is such a complex subject, and the president, has a very simpleton view of it in my mind, that if we have a deficit, somehow they're screwing us. But if that really is his thing, first of all, he's starting from the wrong place. And secondly, the idea that, you know, that everybody has to make this deal because they're ripping us off. Some countries, I mean, Canada, I read that the average American buys $1,500 worth of stuff from Canada. The average Canadian buys like $9,500 from here. How the hell are we getting screwed? I think a lot more people from Canada go to Disney World than people here go to, is there even an amusement park in Toronto? I don't know. I
mean, well, that used to be the case, but Florida now is not seeing the traffic in Canadian tourism. And as a matter of fact, tourists are avoiding the United States quite a bit now. And now there's a question, the U.S., Canada, and Mexico are going to jointly host the World Cup next year, and then 2 years later, you know, the Olympics are in Los Angeles, and with the, you know, all this, what ICE is doing, grabbing people off the street, there's now a fear that, you know, people and athletes will not want to come to this country, because most of the World Cup matches are in the United States. There's going to be a few in Mexico, a few in Canada. So now, you know, there's this trepidation about holding the World Cup and the Olympics in the United States. So I think this goes to a bigger issue of, Florida has always relied on tourism as a cash cow. And now we have the governor here, DeSantis, saying, we don't need those Canadian tourists anyway. Well, you know, there's places up for sale. These Canadians that had bought these homes here as retirement places to come down as snowbirds in the wintertime, they're going up for sale. These Canadians are basically saying, you know, we've had it with the states.
Well, my gentleman I met last night, his wife's kind of tied into the Irish something. Irish tourism here is down 27% or something.
I can't believe that. Andy may know more about that. He's quite close to the Irish organizations in D.C.
But I just kind of wonder, I mean, this is a kind of a personal thing. Where do all these slights come from? I actually read I could probably find it. It was one of the core things. Somebody answered a question, and it had to do with all, like, 10 of Trump's policies. Every one of them was, he doesn't like Panama because they didn't let him build something down there. Or every single one, there seems to be some, of course, this guy might have been all wet too. Every single one of the policy has to do with, like, a personal affront in that country at some time.
Oh, I think that's right. As a matter of fact, that there's another story came through yesterday where the State Department has now got a list of U.S. embassies and consulates abroad that they're going to be closing. And I looked at the list, and some of these buildings are brand new. The U.S. spent millions of dollars building these big palatial type embassies, and they're going to sell them. One is in Malta, the other one's in Grenada, another one in the Maldives. And I said, wait a minute, these are all big tourist destinations. Who's going to be buying these empty buildings? And, you know, what kind of hotels or casinos are they going to be turned into?
What's happening on the Democratic side, other than still being stunned and still think that somehow or another this progressive movement, when are they going to get somebody to shake that up? I mean, we're already almost 6 months into the, you know, the first year, not quite 6 months, but I don't see any. I see them in Illinois screwing around with who's getting what for lunch. I mean, I don't know where that came from. I just happened to. The reason why it resonates with me is I have a lot of very Orthodox Jewish clients, and I know from being at their house and almost I'm inviting them and say, hey, can you guys come over to my place? They basically said what I would have to do for them to eat at my place if you're really a kosher person. I mean, I'd have to get a brand new top for my grill that's never been used before. I'd have to get new grill utensils and have to serve on paper plates. And I'd have to make sure the stuff I bought was kosher because I don't keep a kosher house. It's not the question. You can't just go out and buy a kosher hot dog and put it in your pot and boil it because the pot's had stuff in there that's not kosher.
Yeah.
And I happen to know a lot about this because these guys are good friends of mine. And so the idea that you're going to somehow serve real kosher food in every high school, other than somebody bringing it in a bag themselves, how the hell are you going to do that? Or else somebody's going to get one hell of a contract to service the three people at all these different high schools and drive around and drop their lunch off. Not to mention, I have no idea what halal food's about. I guess I suspect it's close
you know,
to
it's a, halal is, it's funny because, you know, as far as the culinary restrictions are concerned, halal is an awful lot like kosher. Of course, there's no pork or anything like that, and the animal has to be slaughtered in a certain way, and so you get all these restrictions, and I don't know where, how do you accommodate all these culinary restrictions?
You tell them to bring their own lunch.
Yeah. Well, that's what I used to.
Well, you know, it's funny. My buddies like teasing me. What you're really talking about is you're talking about safe food handling rules in hot areas when you didn't have any refrigeration. That's essentially what those rules are all about.
Right.
And with a little, you know, what's funny is there's all kinds of restrictions on wine. Yet virtually all beer and all hard booze is kosher.
Yeah.
But wine's a big deal. You got to have kosher wine.
And then, of course, the restrictions on shellfish.
Yeah.
Of course, that shellfish was basically unknown back in those days in the Middle East. So I guess somebody saw their first lobster and said, well, geez, looks like a bug out of the ocean. We can't eat that.
All fish, if they don't have scales, you can't eat them.
Yeah, right.
So the elections we talked about 2 weeks ago, and then they came through in the the one judge in Wisconsin lost huge, and I think that's the reason why Musk is on his way out, is because he spent so much money up there, and the thing was like a landslide for the Democrat. But in Florida, the two Republican people won, but at a very much like half the percentage that they won the first time through.
Yeah.
How afraid are the Republicans of the midterm, and have the Democrats done anything to stand up? I don't see them doing anything yet. Nobody seems to be a new leader. Schumer refuses to leave, even though a couple guys want him out. Democrats got to reload here, and I don't see them doing it.
Well, the activity seems to be surrounding they're not really town halls because they're sellout crowds in like stadiums and outside. Are Bernie Sanders, who's actually not a Democrat. He's an independent socialist who caucuses with the Democrat Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, and they've been on a joint a town hall swing in very red states and also very red areas of blue states like California. They had huge crowds in Riverside, California, and that's Republican country there. In places like Utah and Idaho, and I think yesterday they were speaking in Montana to these huge crowds. So I think the Democratic Party back in Washington's taking a close look at what's going on with Bernie and AOC, and they're thinking, wait a minute, how are they able to draw these crowds, and it's not even an election year.
One man's opinion, I don't think a reload of the progressive agenda has a chance. Just saying, that's one man's opinion.
Well, I would agree, and what you were talking about, the kosher kind of identity politics, let's take care of each identity group, I don't think that's working. But those are instincts that the party has had for a long time. And part of the paralysis that you talked about is people are rethinking it, but they haven't quite come to a decision.
I don't understand. To be honest, I don't understand that. Maybe because I was on the trading floor for 20 years where it was half trading and half recognizing the people around you, and you learn to read people almost like you're a poker player, right? And I don't get the fact that the Trump and the Republicans have been so successful at setting the debate. The debate somehow became, should boys play with girls, or boys that don't think they're boys anymore, play with girls in the same sport, and oh, by the way, that your daughter is going to get hurt, and sure enough, some guy spiked the volleyball and some girl got a busted nose. And the Democrats are somehow put on the defense of that policy, and the policy has no defense. I mean, I was at brunch with some people last week, and the ladies were kind of right-wing, and one of them said, well, I don't want my daughter getting her nose broken by some guy. The Republicans have Trump is very, very good at setting the tone on this. He tells people how many migrants have killed people. Well, he has nothing to back it up. The fact is, people believe it. And I don't like the fact that some girl got her nose broken by some guy that shouldn't have been there. But the fact is that now going to be your one issue type of thing? I had a dentist for years and years, and the guy passed, and he was very upset with me. Because I'm Catholic, because I voted, I think, for Gore instead of Bush. That was a toss-up to me. I didn't like either one of them, but because of the abortion thing. me being Catholic. And then 2 years later, whatever it was, when Bush invades Iraq, he's beside himself. And I said, you know, Dak, when you're a one-issue voter, you gotta take the good with the bad, buddy. He looked me right in the eye, and he said, you know, you're right. I was so worried about the other thing, and Bush hasn't done anything about that, so he hasn't turned that around at all, and now I'm stuck with this war that I don't want, with people going over and getting killed. And so you're right. He goes, I shouldn't have been a single-issue voter. Well, Trump has managed to put, you know, the immigrants were how many people in this country love their dogs and cats, especially, you know, older ladies, and not the guys don't, they sure do. And all you got to do is say, these guys are eating people's dogs and cats. If 5% of them believe you, you just won an election.
Yeah.
And, you know, and people somehow, how many people to this day that you guys talk to, if you actually put a microphone on their face, how many people are convinced that the other country is going to pay the tariff and not you? I'm going to say 75% of the population.
Oh yeah, they've interviewed these people on the street. They think, I'm going to get a big tax break because all this money's going to be pouring into this nebulous account somewhere. Who are these countries? I mean, who's to blame for that? The news media is to blame for that. I got to point the finger at, you know, my own profession. Because they're not educating people, of course I grew up on, you know, Cronkite and Huntley and Brinkley and, you know, Howard K. Smith, and then later got to know some of those, some of the later ones like Peter Jennings and people like that, and those days are over.
Why doesn't, You know, you weren't in the business like Wayne, to at least that extent. Let me ask you a question. Why, on just simple stuff, like we're putting the Bears are running around here trying to get people to give money for a new stadium, right? They've paid something like $6.5 million rent per year in the old stadium. They haven't paid off like any of the debt of the place, and yet someplace somewhere you would think somebody like Wayne would, not that people read the paper as much as they used to, would have a column in the Tribune and say, let's just review what happened here. We put this place up. Here's been the interest. We had to refinance it once or twice. We still owe all this money. The Bears paid $6.5 million in rent. Here's what a bunch of other teams pay in rent at their place. And, oh, by the way, in the last 20 years, here's how much money we think the Bears made every year, and here's how much they paid in rent. If somebody were to just not lie, just put those numbers out there,
yeah.
I think, why doesn't the average citizen know anything what I'm just talking about?
Okay, well, I've got some good answers that you're not going to like, and neither will your listeners. But one, the kind of story you do, which is the type of stuff Wayne does all the time, costs money to do, particularly if people aren't that good at what they're doing. And the owners of the these news organizations, including the Tribune, but all across the country, they're interested in the bottom line. So they're trying to get layoffs of experienced reporters, and they're thinking of other ways to make money than subscriptions. So here's a quick story. And I've been trying to think, Tom, about how I can add value to your show, and here's an example. I started in the news business. I worked for the Hartford Courant, and the attitude was, go out and get the story, write the kind of story you're talking about, the Bears, the but what's changed, and I actually wrote a book in 1987 about economic changes in the newspaper business, is it change from sort of a concept of public service to profits. And you start looking at, well, who's going to write that story? And let me just give a brief, quick example. As a cub reporter working for the oldest newspaper in the country, the Hartford Courant, I'm doing a story over 50 years ago about when people go to the polls. And it's a little news item from the Secretary of State's office, but it doesn't say when the polls close. And the editor says, here's the phone number of the Secretary of State. Call her up at home. And I said, yeah, but it's night. And he says, she works for the public. Call her up. That attitude is gone.
Well, I would think that even if they don't have the people evolve, Andrew, and you would think, let's say, I'm sure there's people on the air that, you know, might sound halfway intelligent on a subject. I would hope that I sound halfway intelligent on tariffs, because I happened to do a lot of work on that in college. That was one of my take-home finals. And why not say, hey, Tom, why don't write us a really good article. It'll be under your name, and by the way, we'll give you $500 or $200, or we just put your name. I'd probably do it for free. I mean, it would be very simple. Here's a widget comes into this country. There's an importer that brings it in. If the widget costs $100, he's now has to send whatever $20 to whoever's collecting it. His cost is $120. He may decide to pass it on. He probably will. The person on the other side of the pond may say, "We don't want it going up $20. We'll cut the price to $95, which knocks it down a little." And maybe here the retailer says, "I can't go up the whole $15. I'm only going to go up $10." So maybe you, as a final person, only pays up $10. And then the competitor here says, "Hey, those guys are up $10. We can raise ours $5." So you might get screwed on both ends. But at least people ought to know the mechanism, that when it gets here, that guy pays the 20%. I mean, how many people know? It's so simple. How do we not know that?
Here's the problem with that, Tom, is to let you write that article, which you could easily do, and put it in the paper, gives up control over part of the information process from the news organization to you as the writer.
But they're only going to print it if they read it first. They're not just going to put it in there.
Right, but they're not that open to it. And let me give an example going to the radio show world, which it used to be if people wrote a book, they'd have a chance to get on a radio or show as a guest expert. And I had a radio show for a while, and Wayne and I actually have one now, but I was finding that public relations people would try to get important authors on this fairly small show that I had, and I'd ask why, and they'd say, well, we can't get them on cable TV anymore because they want their own people under contract to talk about what their producers want to talk about with a predictable answer. And so I'll just put in a plug for you, Tom, which is your listeners are getting an independent host, namely you, who's able to bring on people, but that's decreasing because the people that run the stations and shows increasingly want predictable, controlled voices that aim at a niche, and that's my view.
We got a dash to break here, guy. In the words of my buddy Dr. J, people will pay for affirmation, not for information.
Yes.
Is that fairly accurate? Yes. I think it is. Yes. Anyway, SP Futures up 27, NASDAQ Futures up 151. Good back, guys. We talk a little bit about the specifics on this NVIDIA $5.5 billion write-down yesterday and the politics behind that. Wow, we'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
European Central Bank cuts interest rates, making Trump even more pissed off at Powell, probably. Warns of deteriorated growth outlook and trade tensions. And I'm going to try and get some of this information out of our two guests here, because this stuff is bizarre. S&P futures up 37, NASDAQ futures up 190. Just bounced up here a little bit. I wonder if maybe that was the reason. Now, the Dow, however, is down 600, because UnitedHealthcare is down like 20%. So that's a big number, because they cited higher healthcare costs that they're paying for. Well, they're paying for their insurance company. DAX down 104.5%, FTSE down 40.5%, CAC around down 56.8%, so down across the board over there. Asia, Nikkei up 457, 1.3%, Hang Seng up 338, big move there, 1.6%, Shanghai up 4, call that flat. Shanghai is not really racking back and forth with Hang Seng here at all lately, but bonds, 10-year unchanged, 4.29. The Bund unchanged, 2.5. Japan up 2 basis points, 1.31. Oil, we get a comment out of Greg on the oil here. Up a buck, but still 63.47. Brent up 92 cents, 66.77. RBOB, however, is up to, RBOB's up to 207. RBOB's higher than when oil was like 72, and I don't quite know what's going on there. Gold, down $5, but still real high. The record was yesterday. We were still at 33.41, silver down 57 cents, 32.41, copper down 7 cents, 4.61. Foreign exchange, and this has been a big mover. The euro is at 113.5, again, it was 108.7 maybe 3 weeks ago. British pound 132.3, that was under 129 about a few weeks ago. We got crypto, Bitcoin's up 591 to 84,745, and a quick review of yesterday, and again, we came back on the close. But the Dow is down 700, S&P down 120, NASDAQ down 516, that's 3%. It was down well over 4. So this is the recovered number, which is pretty awful. Greg, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Morning, everyone. It is 736 here in Chicago. For weather, we have Chicago is 45, yeah. High of 62 today, cloudy and windy with afternoon showers. Phoenix 66 now, high of 81 today. Traffic looks like lighter than normal. Inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 33 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook is 52 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 42 minutes. The Ryan from 95th is 26 minutes. And the Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 29 minutes. Sports, Bulls lose. That was the play-in.
They got blown out.
Yeah, 109 to 90.
I was all set to watch the game. After the second quarter, I shut it off.
Yeah, and let's see. Cubs lose at Padres. That was 2-4. Diamondbacks win Marlins. That was 6-2. And White Sox lose to the A's. And
how do you lose three in a row to the A's? I have no idea.
Yeah. That's all I got, guys. Thank you.
Guys, in no particular order here, one of the articles I read yesterday, I don't forget the NVIDIA thing, but it's kind of in the same question. I think what is somewhat surprising our commander-in-chief, because he seems like he's being thwarted by some of these guys more than he thought. But I read some article yesterday about China, instead of taking aim at the goods piece, they're taking aim at the services, law services, those kinds of things that people do over there. And I guess we have, you know, people do all kinds of services over consulting and so forth. And one of the stocks that we have a lot of here in the firm, we don't own it, the people do, is Accenture, which is a big international consulting firm. And I'm going to say in the last well, I'll dig it up exactly. This stock has been getting hammered. And I have to believe, thank God we got puts on it, but we're still not, you know, covering everything. Stock was pushing $400 in January. Now it's 285. It goes down like every day. And I'm sure the law firms you were talking about earlier. So China, when you do these kinds of, I mean, I think, unfortunately, I think our president really doesn't understand most of this. Now, I don't know the man well enough to really say that, but he's acting like he doesn't. Everything is not just.
It's not an act. He really doesn't.
Well, because I mean, even though we grab a lot of services from China, and I'm not a fan of China. Everybody knows that because of the slave labor and all the other stuff. But the fact is, there's a lot of people that do services, that do business over there, that do consulting work and so forth, and that most people here don't think that's goods, but it is. You know, it's stuff we sell there, and I have a feeling, looking at this Accenture stock, they've been cutting back on this for a while, or at least there's a fear that they're going to. And if all of a sudden, you know, I don't know if that's going to hurt them, not listening to our people and paying for them. I don't know, but it seems like it's part of the mix that our guys didn't seem to think of, or am I just being too uncharitable?
Accenture, isn't that the new name for Arthur Anderson?
Anderson Accounting went toast. This is Anderson Consulting.
Oh, okay.
The big consultant. Yeah. I mean, most of those big eight firms back in those days, they were, I'm going to say, at least as big on the consulting side as they were the audit side and that stuff.
Oh yeah. I actually had an interview with Arthur Anderson right in downtown Chicago many years ago.
Oh, they had a big presence here.
July 1st, and it was 100 degrees in Chicago, and they told me to wear a wool content suit for the interview.
Well, they don't want,
believe it or not,
they don't want some match hit and the polyester's burning you up in the office.
but the thing with the services this almost like law firms would be included in this.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Engineering
and,
firms.
You know, so they're getting it from both sides now. They're getting it hit with the Chinese tariffs and Trump wanting to, you know, whatever, get free pro bono services from them. So I don't know. The one thing that I when the Doge team was breaking into buildings in Washington, I got thinking, they got both sides. There's two buildings. There's the U.S. Institute of Peace on Constitution Avenue. They went in there, and that's sort of an executive branch operation, and then he went after the National Science Foundation, and then right in between those two buildings is the Federal Reserve. And I said, well, when are they going to get
they're independent. You know what? They could use a little cleaning up. I don't like the idea that the guys here in Chicago are still working from home after. I mean, come on, we've got to work, guys. I mean, part of this, and this is maybe Andrew knows something about this. The big hit in NVIDIA yesterday, for those that didn't, NVIDIA was down at one point over $10, which is, you know, it finished down 7 or something. But they've got, when you got to keep telling yourself, you don't have to, but you might want to keep telling yourself that $10 in NVIDIA is a big deal. They've got 25 billion shares outstanding after the splits. So $10 is $250 billion in market cap, which probably, I'm going to say 10 years ago, was... I don't think, were there even three companies that were worth $250 billion? Might have been three or four, but not very many. I mean, it's just massive amounts of wealth. But I think the deal was, and you get their chips, and they're not really. Most people look at a chip; they look at the little thing that sticks on your finger. That's a chip. Their chips are big combinations of stuff. The thing actually is pretty big, right? They're big AI chips. It looks, you know, it's about as big as a shoebox at least, and they had a couple of them that they were selling to people for, like, AI and so. They're real high-end stuff. They're graphics chips that just happen to work for AI. Now, I'm sure they've been... I'm the wrong guy to say to explain this, but anyway, they're real high-end stuff. So I think... I don't know if it was Trump's first administration or Biden, or a combination of the two, said, we don't want those chips going to, like, China, or maybe somebody else being exported... I'm not sure to anybody. I suppose you could sell them in Europe. I don't know. But they, so, because they're too high capacity. So NVIDIA said, okay, we're gonna look at the specs and we're going to design a chip just under the limit. You know, typical workaround by a corporation. And somewhere along the line, either they now can't sell them or that thing didn't work out. But they took a $5.5 billion write-off on the development of that chip. Now, whether they ever finished construction, I don't know. But that was the cause of the $5.5 billion. Do you guys know anything about that? I mean, did Trump guy say, you know, you can't even export that one? Or did they say, some of the other ones have gotten out of here, we don't need this one anymore? I mean, somewhere or another, it cost them $5.5 billion in their mind.
Well, what I do know is Peter Navarro is, you know, the ex-con who is now back advising him on trade issues. He's a definite war hawk when it comes to China. He doesn't think we ought to be giving anything to them. But it sounds like this was a quantum, some sort of quantum computing ship. And I mean, we always had export controls on things that could be used for, they call them dual use control, that they could be used commercially, but they could also be used for military purposes. So that really isn't new. I don't know, though, whether Trump is expanding the definition of what is a dual use military commercial use item. So but that, I definitely think any sort of a quantum computing or, you know, mega fast processing chip might come under that.
Yeah, and again, whatever the original ones were, this thing was designed to be like just under it. You know, go figure. But
yeah,
but I mean, it seems like this, a lot of the stuff that's happening with this Terraform, I hope they weren't simple enough to just think we're going to charge you 50%. You know, come to the office, talk to me, and then we'll straighten it all out. I mean, it doesn't appear to be happening in the. Plus, from what I also read, in the first 2 weeks or something, the receipts on the tariffs are way less than people thought they were going to be.
Yeah, and then he keeps raising. What's the last thing? He's got 245% tariffs on China. Last I saw.
Yeah,
and apparently, one thing that's getting under his and J.D. Vance's skin, China is basically allowing all their computer users who used to be restricted what they could do on, as far as the internet's concerned. They've kind of opened it up to all these Chinese computer people, and they're putting together these AI programs that are basically these videos showing like very obese Americans out working in the fields, Trump and Vance sitting in a assembly line in a warehouse putting screws into iPhones. God. And apparently this is really starting to get under their skids. So I'm beginning to think there's more of a psychological warfare side to this trade war than the actual trade war itself. But I have to laugh at some of them. They actually have one where they have J.D. Vance wearing eyeliner and has a woman's wig on, and he's speaking in Chinese.
God. Well, if you got nothing else to do, if you're not making stuff because you're not exporting it.
Whoever thought that Xi Jinping had a sense of humor, though?
Well, did you, guys, I don't know if it was all over the news or whatever, Ray Dalio talked to you a bunch the other day about this whole thing, and he, you know, he's an old line guy, and he's been a very successful investor. Doesn't make him God or anything, but he was saying something about the craziness of the two most dangerous nations in the world in terms of debt now having a big hissy fight, because we are so much more in debt than anybody else, and right behind us is China. And we're instead of trying to figure out a way to fix it, we're fighting with each other.
Yeah, well, hopefully it stays as a meme war and not an actual shooting war.
Go ahead, Andy.
Oh, I was just going to say, I watch a lot of boxing YouTube videos, and you see different fighters going for the body, and others are headhunters. And in China, with this tariff war, they're putting a lot of attention on hitting what we'll call body shots here. You know, these memes Wayne was talking about, and he shared some of them with me, they're not just keeping them over there. They're putting them over here. And you talked about Accenture and the law firms. A lot of these actions, NVIDIA, they're targeted body shots, in my view, that they're going to hit constituencies at a very vulnerable time. Sure, AI is the future in so many ways, but like a lot of startups, there's vulnerabilities in that process. And over there in China, I would bet anything that they're thinking, what can we do that really sends a jolt at a sensitive point, just like a boxer?
And they're trying to do that. I as you know, I'm for sure not happy with let me start from the beginning. When you have, let's see how much time we have. We got 10 minutes. We can do it. One of the themes lately in the show has been, you know, this international trade. I don't see how, you know, Canada got involved in this mess. To me, it seems like they're a pretty good trade partner. Mexico, but what? How do you even up? I mean, I was, you know, I think you guys know that I actually had a class or two with Milton Friedman. That's how old I am. But he was a massive free trade kind of guy. But I also know that if times changed, he was a pretty brilliant man. And he thought that once you did this trade stuff, that and people picked themselves up economically, that somehow, and this was a fault, somehow they all would be like us. Eventually, you know, the wage earners would grab their proper piece, just like we did here, you know, through unions or whatever. Now, of course, with the offshoring, I think labor has lost a few innings. I don't think anybody would debate me on that. He would say that, you know, if you were to say, Milt, we just got you out of the grave. By the way, this stuff went to China, and now we have our companies paying off people in the party to essentially keep their thumb on the neck of the wage earners, and they're still making nothing, and they're still... And he goes, wait a minute. He would probably say, wait a minute. Our guys are paying their guys off to essentially be the Gestapo to their own people. He would say, well, my deal's off. If you can do that, what I'm talking about isn't going to happen. So somehow along the line, we have places that where this should have started to get better, and sort of it is. Mexico's kind of the same way. I mean, why didn't the wages in Mexico move forward? Now, they have a lot of human capital, so they're probably never going to equal here because they have more people that they could throw at the factory. And the rest of the jobs they have probably aren't that accretive in terms of value, so they are going to work for less in the auto factory. But to this day, we didn't really... I don't think Milton Friedman felt that... offshoring stuff was essentially offshoring child labor and pollution, which it's sort of become in a couple places. How do you deal with that? I mean, Trump's not addressing that, at least not openly. But how do you not, you have to deal with that problem. I don't think you can expect somebody here to compete with somebody who's grabbing Uyghurs out of their house and making them work for free. I mean, how do you even that up? I'm not saying tariffs are a solution, but how do you do it? Do you not do business with a company that... country that has people working under 16, and what do you do?
Well, I'm afraid that taking Florida as an example, because a lot of our agricultural migrant workers have left the state. The legislature is now talking about, and they may do it if they haven't voted on it already, lowering the age for kids that go out and work, and they're talking about 14 years old, and it's clear that they're talking about agricultural work, what these migrants used to do. So if anything, as far as I can see in Florida, we're becoming like those other countries.
Well, but if you wanted to even it up, and what would you do? I mean, you can't expect so. I mean, we do have the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. So you really don't want, you know, I'll just pick a name, really don't want Apple. I mean, look how many rich people there are in China. Well, they got rich because our guys are paying them to keep the other guys poor. Right? Or it seems to me right.
Yeah, I think the Trump administration has basically put a shiv into the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. He's never liked it. He says, well, why can't we pay bribes like these other countries pay bribes? You know, I think when we talk about leveling the playing field, it was to bring those other countries to our standard. I'm afraid we're now going down to their standard.
Well,
if you want to call it a standard, it isn't anything, really. It's,
well, but, you know, but Trump is capable of doing maybe the right thing for all the wrong reasons. Everybody is,
yeah.
Right? I mean,
well,
just because, I mean, him putting a big fat tariff on China for another reason might actually, I mean, we have a couple guys on the show to think that China should always pay a bigger tariff just to even things up for all the crazy stuff they do to their people and the pollution they spend. I mean, I'm not, hopefully not dumb enough to think that if you put pollution in over there, eventually I'm not going to breathe it.
Yeah. I think that everything's so topsy-turvy now. Anything we ever learned in college or or read about, I how do you deal with bedlam?
Well, it sort of is. I mean, Andy, a deep thought. It seems like we have a lot of these. We have, you know, the people that they sent to El Salvador, and they can't get the one guy back and everything. And you talk to a lot of, you know, younger people, whatever, any age group. And, you know, if I say I really don't like that stuff happening, they'll say, what do you mean? They're all crooks. I mean, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, the thing that sets us apart is the process. We know we have some crooks, but they all get their day in court. And that's what sets us apart from the rest of the world. If we could just say, oh, that guy looks guilty to me, shoot him, we would save a lot of time, save a lot of cost, right? But that's not us. At the end of this whole mess here, if you are, you know, you never know when you reach rock bottom where you're going to end up with, right? But it seems to me we're going to decide the next 10, 15, 20 years whether we really want to be us, like the three of us and the rest of the people on the show, think us is, or are we going to have this new us? Is it going to be a moral relativism kind of place? Do we not care about the process? If we don't like somebody, we just can screw them, and if we do, they're okay. I mean, it's almost like the last couple generations, they have to decide for themselves, do they really want this Constitution or don't they? I mean, you know, you and I and Andrew, we're older dudes, we can talk all we want, but it's going to be their call. You know, do they want it or don't they?
Well, that is the question, and part of it goes back to understanding history. And for folks our age, we had parents who knew about World War II, and my folks were from Illinois. Both mother and father joined the military. My mother joined the Marines, dropped out of college in Chicago. But that's a distant memory. That's like the Revolutionary War or to new people. And if they think about it, it's very, very powerful stuff. I'm watching a lot of clips of the movie Casablanca that kind of brought it all out.
Oh, spectacular, but, huh? Spectacular movie.
But that doesn't necessarily resonate with young people. They've got to find their own Casablanca and on issues that they care about. That's the challenge for us who want them to find it, but ultimately they got to do it themselves.
Well, it's not all that obvious unless you look, and you've been here a while, just how unique the European-American... I mean, it could be if we go the other way, 200 years from now, I won't even remember what a middle class was or what any kind of justice system was. I mean, most of the world doesn't have it.
It could be a lot sooner than that.
A lot sooner than that. And I just, when you talk to people, I guess if you never had it, I mean, you know, my generation, I obviously wasn't World War II, but I'll tell you what, we were up on the news when Vietnam was there because it could have been us in that thicket the next day. I don't think you've ever seen people as up on the news as we were. You guys remember that?
Yeah, I remember the draft lottery. Remember?
Yeah. I don't know if you were listening earlier. I was really kind of just in the incidents. Diane Kelly, who's been on the show, and I'm bring her back in because she's so terrific. I should have known, guys, but I didn't realize. I've talked from time to time about how I read some article, you know, pretty detailed article, and an actuary wrote about how many people who were in Vietnam for any reason, not even served, how many of those are dying younger than they're supposed to, just in general numbers. And she says the incidence of cancer of people who were in Vietnam, whether it was whatever. And Lou said people that are military pilots have a huge high incidence of it as well. Does anybody know any of this stuff? She goes,
Yeah.
I mean, it's. She runs a Fisher House over there. And that's for families to stay when. She goes, the amount of people that come up here from Southern Illinois and Iowa and places where they go through their chemo regimen for a week and the family stays there and then they go back home and 3 weeks later they're back, the same thing. See, all these guys are in Vietnam. I mean, I didn't know it was that bad. I knew it was something, but did you?
Well, you know, remember that the pilots were flying those planes that were dropping Agent Orange. So, you know, yeah, they were getting it on the ground, but how much were they getting up in the air, too?
Well, Luke claims it's UV light, especially if you have a canopy. You're totally unfiltered, you know, high up.
Well, I did follow that a lot. One of my colleagues and good friends at the Hartford Current newspaper did a lot of editorials about 40 years ago of the veterans groups that were fighting for coverage. And to bring it up to today, yeah, we can talk about the young people, but some people who are sick but are also politically influential are veterans and their groups. And are the veterans going to fight the cutbacks coming in VA benefits, including on health? And including the cutbacks on research funds at places like Harvard, looking into cancer. And so people can, in these constituent groups, can either just talk about old memories or they can think about life and death, health issues, and medical care that they're entitled to. But if there's cutbacks, they may not get.
Well, guys, we got a dash. I enjoyed it as usual. I love having the boat of you guys. The boat is, as they say in the South Side. I don't know, you guys, does anybody else have this weird South Side accent? I mean, the boat is, actually? I mean, I can't believe with all my education I still talk like that, but what can I say? Anyway, guys, thank you. Have a good Easter. Were you guys a big celebration or nothing?
You know, I'll probably go to my sister's for the annual ham dinner.
Well, let me wish you from both of us the best.
Yeah, both of you guys. SP Futures up 22, NASDAQ Futures up 124. A little bit of bounce back in the Magnificent Seven. We've got Nvidia up 14 cents after getting clobbered yesterday. The one big one down. Not a good day if you own United Health, down 20%. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks. No show tomorrow.
That's all, folks.